Okay, looks all right. Good. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahavidyan Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti 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 hi Chaitanyam Sarvagam Sarvam Sarva Bhuta Guhashayam Yat Sarva Vishayatitam Tasmai Sarva Vide Namaha. Om. Good. Nice to see you all this morning. Good. Also nice to have all of our online students joining us today. We continue with our study of Upadesha Sahasri for quite a few classes now. We've seen Shankara in this big 18th chapter unfolding the methodology called Pratibimba Vada. So, and I called it methodology, metaphor. Just please understand, it's not a statement of fact. It's a teaching method, Prakriya. And I just want to return to that before we move on, because we're done with that topic. Your mind doesn't reflect consciousness. Full stop. Doesn't. Your mind does not reflect consciousness. That is a metaphor that we use for the sake of understanding. Then if you can say, how do I know the relationship? If you're saying my mind doesn't reflect consciousness, then what's going on? Your own experience should be enough to tell you what's going on. This is the approach of Vedanta. This is one place where we throw up our hands and recognize the limitations of logic and say, hey, your own experience is the only criteria by which you can truly understand the relationship between mind and consciousness. Advaita Vedanta has a lot more to say about it, but ultimately it's your own experience. And as we've said many times, that the whole purpose of Advaita Vedanta is to solve a problematic experience, the experience of suffering. Okay, that is our prior topic. The new topic is Pramanavada, the teachings of Pramana. And I think before we get into the series of verses here, we need an introduction to the topic. I don't recall, do any of you remember if this topic, Pramanavada, as a topic came up prior? I think so. No? Okay. So I think what we're going to do today to start the class, let me go to the board, give you an overview. By the way, there are entire texts written on this topic. In Western culture, they call it epistemology. It's a big, important philosophical topic. There are a lot to be said, but we need an overview before, and you may want to sit so you can see the board. If you can't see the board from there, then just sit in another chair, because I'll be at the board for a while. Okay, there is the board. All right. So there are a variety of technical terms that we need to know. They're Sanskrit terms, and you'll notice that there are many Sanskrit terms I don't ask you to learn. Don't learn them. The ones I put on a board are important. So these are worth remembering the meanings of, first of all, pramana is a means of knowledge. You can write down your own definitions. Pramana is a means of knowledge about what a prameya, I'll just put a single word here, a means of knowledge for knowledge about a prameya and object of knowledge resulting in prama, knowledge. Now we have several words for knowledge, including vidya and jnana. Vidya and jnana can be used in a variety of ways, but prama has a more specific meaning. Prama means knowledge gained through a pramana. That's all it means. Okay. Now I mentioned the complexity of this topic in Vedic thought. As you know, there are six major schools of thought based on the Vedas, and they all have different numbers of pramanas. Some have three, some have four, some have six. Vedanta has six different pramanas. Others have three. They all have at least these three. So to simplify our discussion today, we'll look at the main three Vedantas. I'll show you where the other three fit in, but it's perhaps more detail than we need at this point. So the three pramanas we're going to discuss, three of the possible six. The first is pratyaksha. Pratyaksha means perception. So, everything you see, hear, taste, smell, touch, etc., this is all pratyaksha pramana. So, in this situation, the prameya is me, or the board, and the prama is the actual image of me, or the knowledge on the board. So this is kind of the most obvious one. Now things get a little bit more complicated with anumana, which is inference. The stock example we use for anumana is you see smoke over the mountain and you infer the presence of fire. If it's really smoke, then you gain correct knowledge. If it's not really smoke, if it's dust or fog, then you don't get correct knowledge. So notice that the correctness of inference depends on that connecting factor. That connecting factor is usually born of pratyaksha. You see the smoke. Or someplace you might smell smoke and infer the presence of fire. Have you ever, at your home, for example, you say, oh, where is that smoke coming from? You smell it before you see it. So we could say then that anumana is a logical inference based on some perception or based on another anumana. We can set up a whole chain of inferences, but again, we don't want to get too technical here. I mentioned that in Advaita Vedanta there are three more pramanas accepted. For now, let us consider them variations on anumana. They're like subsets of anumana. We're not, as I said, we won't discuss them because it's overly technical, and also because they're not universally accepted. They're used, again, Vedanta is all methodology, so Vedanta has a fairly complex methodology, therefore a total of six pramanas in Advaita Vedanta. The final one is Shabda Pramana. Shabda literally means words, which is a good translation, but it's not that meaningful. Testimony would be a much better translation, except for the fact that shabda doesn't mean testimony. Shabda means words. But the idea is words used to convey testimony, and there are two main places where we find testimony. Obviously in scripture, I think most of you are thinking of scripture now, but not exclusively scripture. In a more general sense, anyone or anything who can use words or information to convey something is shabda pramana. So when I tell you about the beautiful waterfall at the base of the at the foot of the city of Gangotri up in the Himalayas, you get, I am a pramana. Shabda pramana is being used to give you knowledge of that waterfall. You can see how I'm doing today. Okay. Now, the two main categories would then be scripture, shastra, and the term we would probably use for person, apta vakya. Vakya, the statement of an apta, a person who has acquired knowledge. But notice, each one of these three can be defective. The classical example is somebody with jaundice sees everything is kind of yellow. That's the typical example. Anumana, I've already said, if you don't have the correct knowledge, if you haven't seen correctly that it truly is smoke, you can make a mistake. Also in shabda, do books always tell the truth? People, oh my God, we don't have to talk about that with all the politics going on nowadays. So shabda pramana, any pramana can yield correct or incorrect knowledge depending on the situation. And sometimes the situation is you. Let me get back here. Okay. If you're blind, then you don't see anything. If you can't reason properly, if you can't hear, I'm just pointing out that there are a lot of factors involved in the use of a pramana. Now, anything more need to be said there? Just check my notes. Okay, so I think that is a brief but sufficient introduction, because Shankara presumes that you've learned all of this. Actually, in ancient times, not even ancient times, 1,000 years ago, before you could study Vedanta, you had to study a lot of other things first, including Sanskrit grammar. You had to master Sanskrit first before you even began studying grammar. There are very few places where that's maintained. In the Kailasa ashram in Rishikesh, which is kind of the most traditional ashram, teaching goes on there in Hindi and Sanskrit. I don't think they have any English classes at all, classes in English medium. But if for their brahmachari residents, they make these brahmacharis go through a program of learning. So they have to learn logic, they have to learn grammar, they have to learn something about the six darshanas. There's a lot of introductory studies they're required to go through before they're permitted to study, especially Upanishad Bhasha. So that's kind of the sequence. So that's maintained to some extent relatively few ashrams. But 1,000 years ago is probably the rule that you had to do that. You had no choice. So and the reason is obvious. If Shankara here is teaching, assuming that you know something about these pramanas, well, it's necessary to understand. All right, I think that is enough introduction. Let us, Still recording. I pushed the wrong button. Okay, we're still recording. Okay, let us then pick up the thread. Oh, that didn't come. I see it here, but I don't see it up there. Let's see, make sure this is coming. If I do this. Good. All right, so I have to relaunch. You know, all kinds of headaches these days. The Windows, I was complaining to Vasanti. Windows update gave me a very entertaining morning because after this updated, nothing worked. So thank you, Windows update, for giving me a very entertaining morning. All right, let's try this again. Now, I have to get the focus here. Shift F5. There we go. All right. No problem. Okay. Pratanam grahanam siddhihi. Pratanam grahanam siddhihi. Pratyayanamihanyataha. Pratyayanamihanyataha. Aparokshyathare voktam. Aparokshyathare voktam. Anumanam pradipavata. Anumanam pradipavata. So, in your mind, vrittis are present. Mental events. And just to precede our discussion here, please recall, and we've discussed this at great length, the only thing you have ever experienced directly in your entire life is the contents of your mind. Right? Everything outside is experienced indirectly, secondarily, by means of our five senses. So the only thing you have the direct, immediate experience of is the contents of your mind. The contents of your mind are various thoughts, emotions, perceptions. We call them all vrittis, mental events. And those vrittis have pratamam, pratana, sorry, they appear, I'm sorry? Did what? What? Yes?
I just want to make sure.
Yeah, thank you for checking. Yeah, I pushed the wrong button, but it is still recording. Thanks. No, it's important. We want to make sure the recordings are there. Okay, so pratana is the appearance of a vritti. Grahana is the grasping that vritti has a content, represents something. Right now in your mind is a vritti of Swami Tadatmananda. You recognize, oh, that is Swami Tadatmananda. That is grahana. And there's also siddhi. You say, if I ask you, are there any vrittis in your mind? I don't know, what would you answer, right? I don't think so. So, all of these vrittis are present in your mind. Here, instead of calling them vrittis, Shankara calls them pratyayas. Pratyaya has other meanings as well, but here pratyaya is used as a synonym for vritti, mental activity. So, pratyayanam, for the vrittis in your mind, there is a pratana, appearance, grahana, grasping, and siddhi, they exist. Okay. We're not done with the topic of pramana yet. And this is where Shankara is going with this topic. Okay. This is a trick question. I'm warning you in advance. By which of these three pramanas that we've just discussed, let me go back to the board. And I have to turn this one off. Yes. By which of these three pramanas that we've just discussed, do you know what's happening in your mind, the vrittis in your mind? And the fact that I've warned you that it's a trick question means it's probably Number four. None of the above. All right? Okay. So let's come back here. So these are known directly. They're called Sakshi Pratyaksha. Pratyaksha is a term that we use not just for perception, but anything that is directly perceived. We just have to leave it there. This is how the Pramanavada is structured, and I think other philosophers might take other approaches, but we'll stay with this traditional, with the traditional approach. So, to see me, your eyes are sufficient. Actually, this is the distinction. I'm stumbling over the word Sakshi Pratyaksha because it's a familiar expression in Sanskrit, but it's a little problematic. And that's why I'm stumbling. The reason it's problematic is Pratyaksha we understand as an instrument. In fact, all of these pramanas are instruments by which you gain prama. Knowledge. By the instrument of your five senses, you gain knowledge of the world. By the instrument of anumana, you infer the presence of fire. By the instrument of words, you gain knowledge from scriptures and from people who know things. Trick question. By what instrument do you know what's happening in your mind? And that's more complicated than you might think. The first thing you might think is that instrument in Sanskrit, by the way, is karana. You have such a thing as an antahkarana, which we've said many times is like a sixth instrument, a sixth sense organ, mind. But here we're talking about knowledge of the mind. So all of these pratyayas are in the mind. So I'm asking you, how do you know not just what your five senses pick up? I'm asking you, how do you know what's going on in your mind right now? And please don't suggest that, oh, the mind knows itself. Some people go for that. What does that even mean? The mind knows itself. Can the eye see itself? Can the ear hear itself? You get the point. It's faulty logic if somebody says, oh, the mind knows itself. That doesn't work at all. So then the question is, by what pramana, more specifically, by what instrument do you know what's happening in the mind? And again, it's a trick question. You don't use an instrument. You directly know, without the help of any instrument at all, you directly know what's happening in your mind. That is called Sakshi Pratyaksha. Here, Pratyaksha, that's where I tripped up. Okay. So this word pratyaksha is used in a very limited sense when we're talking about pramana. I'm sure if you pull out a dictionary, look up pramana. By the way, you know that you don't pull out dictionaries anymore. We've got a bunch of them in the library. But why bother paging through this 2,000-page dictionary when you just sit down at your computer, type it in? You get lots of dictionaries online. Okay, I'm just pointing out something. If you look in any dictionary, pratyaksha will probably have a dozen meanings, I'm guessing. Okay. And this pratyaksha that we're using in terms of the pramanas is not number one. It's down there someplace. It might be. I shouldn't say that so confidently. Anyway, it may not be number one because the word pratyaksha is used in other senses as well. And it's used as the antonym of pratyaksha is paroksha. Of course, we also have aparoksha. Paroksha means remote. This is another meaning of pratyaksha. The opposite of paroksha, remote, is aparoksha, not remote. And we can use the word pratyaksha for aparoksha. And I'm sorry, this is a little convoluted, and I apologize. I try my best not to do this to you. But it's a little hitch, a little problem with that word pratyaksha being used casually, as in the expression sakshi pratyaksha. So coming back to our main point, set the language stuff aside, the main point is whatever is happening in your mind right now, you don't do anything, you don't use anything to know what's happening in your mind. To see me, you use or wield the instrument of pratyaksha. To know the fire on the mountain, you use or wield the pramana of anumana, inference. And to know about heaven and hell and all religious things, you use or wield the pramana we call shabda pramana. Clearly, you don't use or wield any pramana whatsoever to know what's happening in your mind. Why? A pramana is wielded by someone. You are that. You can't wield yourself. That's another nonsense thing, like the mind knows itself. You can't use yourself as a pramana. It's just so simple and obvious. Whatever appears in your mind is directly known to you. So, and that's what Shankara goes on to say here, that for these pratyayanam, for these mental events which appear, which are grasped, which exist in your mind, iha here in your mind, anyataha aparokshyat. They are known anyataha, by another means, by a means other than the three pramanas we've been talking about, they are known how? Aparokshyat. We use that word aparoksha, immediate. Aparokshyat, because they are immediately known to consciousness. That consciousness we call Sakshi Chaitanya. At least that term is absolutely solid. Consciousness in the role as that which reveals the activities of your mind. We use the term Sakshi Chaitanya. Chaitanya, you know, is consciousness. But this is not just consciousness. This is consciousness in its role of revealing the activities of your mind. We call that Sakshi Chaitanya. Notice, no pramana is involved. This is important. Okay? So going on now. Tadeva, this is interesting. Tadeva uktam, how can we say that consciousness reveals the activities in your mind without any instrument? That's knowledge, right? This is a statement that consciousness, Sakshi Chaitanya, reveals the activities in your mind without using an instrument. That's a statement. It turns out to be a true statement, which means it's knowledge. How did you get that knowledge? We're back to our Shruti Yukti Anubhava once again. So, first of all, Shruti says it. By the way, what is your experience right now? Do you know what's happening in your mind? Are you using any particular instrument that you're aware of? I mean, if you were using an instrument to know what's happening in your mind, it should be possible to put down that instrument and stop knowing what happens in your mind. Of course, you don't know what's happening in deep sleep, not due to the absence of an instrument, but due to the absence of the mind. The mind is an abhija avastha, resolved state, a seed state, as it were, during deep sleep. So you don't have any experience of using an instrument to know what's happening in your mind right now. So we have anubhava, we have shruti, and now we have, Shankara gives us some yukti to establish the fact that whatever happens in your mind is known directly to you, the conscious observer, without the use of any pramana. How do we know that? He says, anumanam. That is known through inference. Inference how? He gives a powerful metaphor. Inference like pradipavat, like a lamp. So a lamp illumines objects. In the absence of the lamp, objects would not be illumined. In the absence of objects, the lamp wouldn't illumine anything. And if we apply that metaphor, by the way, the use of metaphor happens to be one form of anumana. I mentioned that Vedanta has four variants of that anumana, four, actually 1 + 3, and it turns out that upamana means inference. Upamana is one of those subsets. So use of metaphor is considered a sub, like we can consider the use of metaphor is a kind of logic. So here we have the metaphor. Why do we just use this? We have this light bulb shining on me. The light illumines me. In the metaphor, you are the light bulb and you shine on whatever is present in your mind. Again, it's a metaphor. Just like your mind doesn't reflect anything, there's no light bulb shining in your mind. There's no light. We use it light constantly as a metaphor. If we use the light of awareness, shining awareness, it's helpful, it's valuable language. We need these metaphors to understand things. But please don't get confused. They are metaphors. Consciousness doesn't shine except in a metaphoric sense. Okay? So, Shankara says here that we also, in addition, we'll finish up this verse. How do you know what's happening in your mind right now? It is known to you because you are a conscious observer, Sakshi. Therefore, Sakshi Chaitanya is that consciousness or awareness by which all mental objects are known without any intervening instrument or nothing in between. They're known directly. How do we know that statement to be true? It conforms to our experience. It's said so in scripture, and we have this logic given by this metaphor of the lamp. So by the metaphor of the lamp, like the lamp reveals objects in a room, your consciousness reveals the activities of your mind. All right. Now, is it working? Yes. Kim agnyam grahayet kaschata. Kim agnyam grahayet kaschata. Pramanena tu kena chata. Pramanena tu kena chata. Vinayva tu pramanena. Vinayva tu pramaneva. Nivrityanyasya sheshataha. Nivrityanyasya. This is actually the statement of a Purva Pakshi, an opponent, who says, Kim is used here as a question mark. You know how Spanish, they put the question mark before the sentence also, and after? So this is our question mark in Sanskrit. Question. Kashchat grahayet. Should someone grahayet, should someone teach agnyam, an ignorant person? Should someone teach an ignorant person? Remember, our context here is Advaita Vedanta. So should someone teach what? Satchitananda Atma, consciousness, the true nature of consciousness. So should true consciousness be taught to an ignorant person? Kena chit pramanena. By means of some pramana, one of the three, vina eva tu pramanena, or vina pramanena, without eva, without any pramana at all. Now, how would you teach anything without a pramana? Well, Shankara says, nivritya anyasya sheshataha. Through a process of nivritti here means negation. You can teach through negation. And then anyasya sheshataha, leaving something behind. And indeed, Vedanta uses negation. Have you ever heard of Neti Neti? Of course you have. That's such a fundamental aspect of Advaita Vedanta, is negation. Absolutely fundamental. So we start, you are the observer. Whatever is observed is not you. Okay, you observe everything around you, not you. You observe your hand, not you. Your arm, not you. Your body, not you. You observe the prana in your body. If I ask you, are you tired today? You're observing your prana. So prana is observed by you. Your faculties, sight and hearing, etc., are known to you. Your mental activities are known to you. Emotions are known to you. Anything known to you as an object is not you. This is neti neti. This is negation. Anything known to you is not you, and then we can go one by one. There's also an order to it. It's not random negation. If we try to do negation randomly, it doesn't work. If I start out by saying, you're not an elephant, you're not a stone, you get the point. Random negation doesn't work. I don't want to get into the details. This is not our topic here. But some of you remember that Arundhati Darshana Nyaya, the tracking of the stars. It'll take 20 minutes to describe it. We won't get into it right here. But if you know it, you can make that connection right here. So directed negation, not random negation, but directed negation, indeed is used in Advaita Vedanta. Is that how does... So the questioner says, can you make someone understand their true nature as Satchitananda Atma? Can you make them understand? Should you make them understand with a pramana? Or without a pramana? Without a pramana means negation alone. Notice negation wasn't up there. By the way, those of you who know of something called anupalabdhi, it's not the same as negation. And again, I don't want to get into this is, again, one of those subsets of anumana. If you happen to know what is anupalabdhi, that's, it is not negation. It's a form of inference. If you don't know what is anupalabdhi, consider yourself fortunate. You don't have to worry about what I just said. And you're not missing anything. Okay. So notice that when we talked about the three pramanas, negation was not one of them. Why? Huh. Is negation an instrument that gives you knowledge about something? It's negation. It's useful, extremely useful. But you've heard, I've given this example before. If negation is a pramana, please describe an elephant through negation. Go ahead. You'll be negating, you know, it's not a car, it's not this, it's not that. When will you rule out all other possibilities so that elephant alone remains? Negation, in and of itself, is not a pramana. Okay? With that in mind, we can see Shankara's response to this statement, where he says, Shabde naiva pramanena, Shabde naiva pramanena, Nivrittischedi hochyate, Nivrittischedi hochyate, Adhyakshasya prasiddhatvat, Adhyakshasya prasiddhatvat, Chunyataiva prasajyate, Chunyataiva napsajyate. End of the second line. Iha uchyate, if you say here, that shabdena pramanena, by means of shabda pramana, by means of words, if you're using words, nivrittihi chet, also chet, if you're using these words, if you are using words to negate. So if there is nivritti, if you are performing negation, shabdena pramanena, through words. So again, you want to define elephant, it's not a car, it's not a house, so we're using words to negate for the sake of defining elephant. And doesn't seem to work. Right? And that's what Shankara says here. If it doesn't work for an elephant, will it work for you? It's more complicated than you think. Anyway, let's see Shankara's response here. He says, Adhyakshasya aprasiddhatvat. He says, there is aprasiddhi. You fail to establish. Establishment of what? Adhyaksha. Adhyaksha means the main thing. You, consciousness. You fail to establish prasiddhi. There is no prasiddhi. There is no establishment of consciousness. We can negate everything else, but we can't establish consciousness. So if you negate everything else, So we're set the elephant aside now. We're not talking about elephants. We're talking about you, your fundamental nature, consciousness. After we negate everything else, what's left? Of course, what's left is you, but that's not the point Shankara's making here. We're using logic right now. So just using this logical technique of negation, and only using this logical technique of negation, when you negate everything that is not consciousness, by the way, can we do that? If we say you can't negate everything other than an elephant, you know, there are too many things, then how can we say, oh, you have to, you negate, make a joke out of this, so you start negating your body. How? I'm not my thumb, I'm not my... And then you open up an anatomy book and you see how many parts and bits there are. When will you be done negating your body and then mind and prana and everything else? So you can kind of make this argument that, it's too complicated to negate. Well, you can negate categories. You don't have to negate individual things. You can negate categories of things like physical things. Anything that's a physical object is not you. Hey, that rules out not just one or two things, that rules out a whole category. And it's so easy. Anything that's not conscious is not you. That's it. That's negation. That's the final negation. Anything other than consciousness is not you. That is a categorical negation. But that categorical negation doesn't establish you as a conscious being. And that's why Shankara observes here that if you do this categorical negation, Everything that is not conscious is not you. So as a result of that categorical negation, what remains? So that was his prior verse where he says that anyasya sheshataha, you leave something remaining after that. But he observes that chu is shunya. Shunyata eva prasajyate. Your efforts, prasajyate, would result in shunyata alone. Emptiness alone, nothingness alone. And this is indeed the Buddhist strategy, or one of several Buddhist strategies. They use negation as vigorously as we do in Advaita Vedanta. But having done all that negation, we have a final step that they don't. What is our final step? So they have shruti, yukti, anubhava. So they have yukti and anubhava. We have yukti and anubhava. They don't have shruti. They've rejected the Vedas. That's one of the defining features of Buddhism. So, having rejected the Vedas, having negated everything else, what's left? Shunyata eva. In Advaita Vedanta, we need shruti. We need the revealed intuitions of the ancient rishis to know I am that. This is where Mahavakya comes in. Tattvamasi. You, the conscious being, are that. That absolute reality which remains. This next verse then pulls together this topic. We'll see that one more verse. Shabdatvanum, Shabdad vanumeter vapi, shabdad vanumeter vapi, pramadad vatatonyataha, pramanad vatatonyataha, siddhi sarva padartanam, siddhi sarva padartanam, syadagnyam pratinanyata. Syaryagnyam pratinanyata. Certainly, third line. Excuse me. Siddhihi, establishment of something. So this is the opposite of negation. You can negate something, or you can establish something. And Shankara says here, the establishment, sarva parartanam, pararta, any object, anything. So the establishment, sarva parartanam, of all things, to establish anything, is a last line, syat, prajnam prati, syat, yes, is. To establish anything, ajnam prati, to an ignorant person, to us to make an ignorant person understand anything, he says, that is done how? What do you need to make someone know? And that's our topic today, pramana. We said negation is not a pramana. It only negates. It doesn't establish anything. So how to establish? Through a pramana. Which pramana? Go up to the top. Shabdatva. Through Shabda Pramana, Anumitihi. Anumiti means Anumana. Anumana happens to be neuter. Pramiti, Anumitihi happens to be feminine. They mean the same thing. Anumana. Anumana va api. So either through Shabda Pramana or through Anumana Pramana, inference. Pramanad, Anyataha Pramadat. Pramanatva, or through some other pramana, what's left out? Pratyaksha. Or fill in all six if you want to, but we cover all the pramanas, and that is to establish something in a positive way, you require a pramana. Negation is crucial, absolutely crucial, that neti-neti is central to the teachings of Vedanta. There would be no Vedanta without negation. But Vedanta is more than negation. So to establish something in a positive sense, the commentator says, just blanked out. He says, vidhi mukena. This is kind of a technical Sanskrit. Vidhi mukena, that which is an assertion, as opposed to nishedha mukena, that which is a negation. So negation is a valuable tool, but negation alone is not a pramana, which is why the Buddhists are left with shunyata. On the other hand, Vedanta makes use of pramanas. Of course, Buddhism makes use of pramanas as well, but not shabda pramana, having negated the Vedas. So of the three, so here Shankara mentions three, all three of our pramanas, but let's be very clear that it is shabdat, through shabda pramana, and set aside anumana and pratyaksha, because it is through shabda pramana alone that you know tat. That's where Shabda Pramana comes in. So basically, and the last word, na anyataha, and not in any other way. So, yeah, we'll end with this. Here is a super simplified Vedanta, which is do a lot of negation, neti, 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 etc., etc., and then last step, tatvamasi. That's how it works. Of course, what is tut, what is tvam, how can tut become tvam, and how to do all that negation. There's a lot going on. But what I've just said is an accurate summary of the entire teachings of Advaita Vedanta. It is, I'm going to add just a little bit of detail here, it is directed negation, followed by understanding what is tat and what is tvam. By the way, understanding what is tvam is also part of that negation. Anyway, that's not our, but let's not get too fussy here. So understanding, we can put it like this. Understanding tvam through this process of negation, understanding tat through the teachings of Advaita, and understanding their identity through the teachings of Vedanta, that's Shabda Pramana. That's it. That's all it is. Yeah, right. But it is an accurate portrayal. There's a negation leading you to understand what is tvam. Then there is a lot of profound teachings to understand what is tat. And finally, there is the declaration of the identity of the two. That is the ultimate revelation due to Shabda Pramana. It's a good place to conclude today. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet, Asato Ma Sadgamaya, Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amritangamaya. Om Shanti 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 Om Tat Sat. Good.